It feels we're wet with milk, but also urine and all down. So they become so fertile by having cows, and everything grows like anything. And the people are nourished by all the milk products and all the medicine, everything the cow is providing. Something that, you know, people are trying to wake up to. When I was young in America, they would say that milk is like the perfect food. That was the advertisement. Everybody told us milk is perfect food. Now they say it's poison, and you know, you shouldn't take any to kill. The cow is like only meant to be killed because everything about it is bad, and the dung is tough because of fresh dung. If you don't spread it out or something, and when they have too many cows, it becomes toxic. So then they're saying it's bad. This is the demons. Even in India, you know, in vegetable ghee. Ghee means cow ghee, probably. I went in one shop, I asked for ghee, they said, we have vegetable ghee. They think that's better. Vegetable oil, you know, in America, they'll come to donate a big bucket of oil and say, ghee is no good. Oil is better. But ghee is actually the only oil that a human can digest. That we had one Mataji in America, her father was a nutritionist, you know, and he did research. And first, I don't know why they did the research, but his conclusion was, of all the oil, only a human can only digest ghee. But now they promote all this oil, you see it everywhere. This oil has soybean, peanut, and what's that other one? They call canola now in America. Sounds really bad, so they don't use the name. So, but the cow is essential, and taking care of the cow is, you know, they have a therapy now, cow hugging or something. That actually, you know, people hug cows and then they feel better. They're mental distress gets cured. So that used to be that, you know, everybody, even I was in Fiji Islands in the early 80s, and, you know, everybody had a cow or two in their house, and the farmers, everybody's peaceful and happy, they have enough milk, they have fertilizer, and they have someone to plow their fields. They have everything they need. Simple living and high thinking. So, this is Prabhupada gave that motto over and over again, and we're hoping to get into it more and more, that we can live simply, be satisfied with what we can produce, and learn how to produce everything, like he's learning here. When farmers know, you know, they know what to plant, when to plant it, so they always have nice things. Some things are there all the time. And they can sell whatever you need extra. And you have time. I saw one man was testifying, he's in Thailand, and he was from the village, and, you know, modern day, everyone said, you have to go to Bangkok, you have to get education, you have to work. And so he went, and he studied hard, and he got a job, and he said he was just struggling all the time, just to make, you know, just to live, even though he had a so-called good job. He went back to the village, he said, there, he said, that's why we people have so many festivals, because we don't have to work that much, you know. The rice, you plant it, you wait, you pick it, everything is all right. He said, I built two houses, didn't cost me almost anything. And my friend who stayed in Bangkok, he's going to pay for his house for the next 30 years, working 12 hours a day. So we go to the city to try to help people to get spiritual understanding. Prabhupada very much wanted us to have, to show like how we can live this philosophy. Not that we just have big temples in the city and lots of cars and trucks, but that we have the life or we're working, and everyone can be happy and satisfied living, you know, in nature. People, rich people, they, you know, we just had a retreat in Mahabaleshwar, you know, some people that they work so hard and they have to spend so much money to stay in those resorts, to be, or to go walk in the mountain or, you know, swim in the river, or they have to pay so much money, then they have to go back to work. I preach in a lot of tourist areas, and everything is anti-stress, anti-aging, and they pay so much money to de-stress for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they have to go right back to New York City or London or Paris or, you know, whatever city it is, and again get right back into it, riding the subway every day and driving 3-4 hours. So this is what we really want to do. It's very, very good, and we can show people, we can help people change India around. India is a very mysterious place because we have many goshalas. There's some that have like 100,000 cows, and they'll take any old cow, sick cow, right? And rich people will donate, take care of that cow its whole life. But on the other hand, India is the number one exporter of beef and leather. Both are going on simultaneously. So, and I heard that one guy that, you know, he said, there's so many people against the slaughterhouse, but gradually they'll wake up and understand there's so much money to be gained from exporting beef. They'll give up their stupid religious ideas, old-fashioned, you know, ideas of protecting cows. But the cow is, you know, the best. Of course, you can't keep a cow in the city as a pet, but in the countryside, they're so loving, they're so nice, but they also provide so much. I'm learning, you know, the dead body of a cow after 1 year, you dig it up and it's valuable, chemicals. The bones and the horns, valuable, and you can make super fertilizer from the cow dung and the horn. And all these things are known, but, you know, people are trying to force them, you know, farmers to buy, you know, some kind of chemical made from oil or something, imported. So we're learning, and devotees are fortunately learning how to recycle everything, how to use everything over and over again. Everything is valuable. For fuel, cow dung. In India, the cow dung is such a valuable part of the fuel. It makes everything grow. It's also the BBC, they have some kind of research, and they said that people that are around cow dung, it has some sort of special antibiotic qualities. So just by smelling it, and the, you know, when they're burning it, the people that grow up like that, they don't get all kinds of sicknesses that other people get. Although the other people are saying cow dung is deadly poison, and, you know, that's the mystery Prabhupada gave. That, you know, we say in the Vedas, the stool is, you know, if you touch stool, you have to take a bath. And but then we say cow dung, you used to clean the deity paraphernalia, and clean the altar, and it's the most antiseptic, pure thing. The cow dung house, you won't get any insects, you won't have mosquitoes there. People stay healthy. So this is, we have to apply. We see Radhana Swami's room in Bombay has cow dung walls. Many are doing that now. And it's just so nice. It creates a beautiful color, and it lasts a long, you can fix it up, it doesn't cost anything. You know. And it's antiseptic, it has good smell. When you smell it, it makes you healthy. So it's unlimited. And living out here like this, of course, you know, we're all, I myself, addicted to city life and wonder, you know, but we see how everybody feels good immediately. So we want to be able to show people, and you can come and live, and gradually it's all devotees working. These farms now, we engage with local people, and then they become devotees also by association with devotees. There's one Buddhist group in Thailand, and Every center they have has a vegetarian restaurant and an organic shop. So they make a lot of farmers join their religion, and they teach them, make sure they're growing organic, and then they provide organic. They have a mission, you know, to sell the organic food at the same cheaper price than the other stuff. And they promote their vegetarian, they engage all their householders in restaurants and food distribution. Not the Sodom, but something like the Sodom. But they're Buddhists, so they don't have the idea of God, but they've got the Varna Ashram. We can learn from them, and maybe you can pick up. They have their restaurants, so everything that's left over, you know, from preparation, all the cutting and all the peelings and everything, they ferment that, and they have big barrels out back, and then they make organic soap and organic house cleaning stuff and organic everything, and sell that also. And all their members are volunteer workers. If they live there, they live on almost nothing. So they, anyway, they survive. The Kali Yuga is so degraded that the main Buddhists that are very influential there, they tried to stop these people. They said they're not real Buddhists because they're vegetarian. That's how it perverted everything. When Buddha's main teaching was not what was ahimsa, you know, he stopped the slaughter. You know, he taught people that if you know, it hurts when you hurt someone, and then you'll get the reaction. But now the so-called Buddhists are meat eaters and drunkards, and Hindus are eating meat, you know, mistreating cows. So we have to teach them. Now we're doing it practically, not just talking about it, but actually doing it. So it's very, very enlivening. I hope we can publicize this more and more, that you're doing this, because it's not known in the rest of the world. You know, we know about the big temples in India. That gets in the news, right? Big, big news. Another temple opened in another city. But we don't get news, so we have to tell our news people. In fact, Anudama just told you to write an article, right? Yeah, so please do that. I'll send pictures also. We want the world to know, and this is what Prabhupada wanted to do. This is real Varnashram. He says, what is Varnashram? Means to live off the land. And there's many devotees that try to philosophize, you know, and argue about what is Varnashram. It's not that complicated. It's not that we have to be able to say this is a Brahmin, this is a Sudra, and you have to live over there, and you live over there. And, you know, that some people think that's Varnashram, and the woman can only stay home all the time and carry stuff on her head or something. Varnashram means everyone is working according to their, you know, ability and what they're naturally good at and what they like to do, and it's all being directed towards Krishna. That's what has to be there. Not just working, but all going towards Krishna. So we're very fortunate to be here. And I recommend that any devotees who are doing that streetlight book distribution, they should come here once a week for a day or two. Clear out your lungs. That's what I said, that because it will work. It clears out, you know. Get more energy to, you know, help these people, because many people are never going to get them out of their luxurious apartments, but at least we want them to, you know, live a sattvic life in their eating and their entertainment and everything. They can come to the temple and they can get food that's produced, you know, from the farm. People like the cow products. So, I don't know what else to say, but Prabhupada said for householders that farming is the best occupation. He had some special word for it. Farming is the best occupation for the householder. propaganda, you know, in the most of the world is farmers, you know, that's for losers. In, like in Japan and America also, that you don't find very many young farmers. They're all old. All the young people went to the city. They've been watching television and they thought, wow, that sounds much better. And they say it's prestigious. You know, you get an education, become an engineer, and work hard your whole life, trying to save money so you can have a vacation in the countryside and stay in a resort. Huge money. So let's push this on and tell everybody, you know, we have this, we're doing this, this is something worthwhile. And Hare Krishna. So now, do you have something to say? Vani Pedia?
Come.
He's one of the big book distributors of the world, sitting in his office. Right?
Hare Krishna.